Today's Wednesday, October 9th, 2019, and this week on the Shell and Tell podcast, we're going to take a look at the good, bad, and ugly of a bounce-back win over Rutgers. We're going to get into some of our kicking woes because things have not looked good. What to expect from the hot and cold Terps at Purdue? And is our Minnesota trip going to be a golden opportunity? Stay tuned. What's up, everybody? Fred, Ryan, it's episode 7 of the Shell and Tell podcast, and the Terps win a big one, a one that they had to have up in Rutgers, 48-7.
Yep, I just want to apologize for lying to you all. I said on the last episode we would not be able to do another one after Rutgers, but obviously I'm addicted to this at this point. I really enjoy talking to you guys.
It's starting to become an obsession.
Yeah, I mean, we can't say weekly because like I'm scared of commitment.
I've noticed that.
And so I can't do that. We got to just keep this like a surprise show. This is a surprise show for you guys.
Hey, man. People are asking for it, so we got to give it to the people.
Yeah, we did get asked to go weekly. I remember that. It happened from one person. We'll just pretend lots of people
That's
are asking.
That's all right. Yeah, millions
if
of people.
If you also want us to go weekly and, you know, give me some stuff to pressure my wife into doing this more often, comment, concerns, you know, send us emails, put us on Twitter, whatever you want. Just tell us to do it weekly. It'll make me feel better.
Well, as I said, man, this was a game that the Terps absolutely had to have after the last 2 weeks of pretty much embarrassing football. This was an important game, a game that Terps definitely should have won, but I think you and I both had some concerns going into this game.
Yeah, but you can see by our predictions. I mean, I had it 17-6 Maryland. You had it 20-17 Maryland. Actual 48-7 Maryland, so we weren't quite as confident as we should have been, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, of course, some news came out after with their quarterback sitting out to redshirt, and then right before the game, their starting running back also sitting out considering a redshirt. So maybe our scores have been a little closer, but I doubt it because we were low on the Maryland side. I wasn't high on the Rutgers side there, so right. Mine wouldn't have changed much, I don't think.
Well, I mean, it's one of those games where you should, again, looking at the odds when you're going up against a quarterback who's making his first start, a quarterback that I will make note of, this kid was stacked. This kid was built. He was strong. He was stiff-arming guys left and right.
Yeah, in the first quarter, I started a tally because I swear it was the first drive. He stiff-armed two of our defenders to the ground.
Yeah.
And I just started a tally. 1, 2. Well, that's all there is in my tally. It's 2. I really thought it was going to be a lot more. I wouldn't need tallies to count that high.
Right. And they came out on the first drive of the game, and this kid looked like, you know, he was going to make something of this day because, I mean, he came out and drove right down the field getting inside the Terps' 20-yard line.
Yep, we had our special teams save us. That's might be one of the very few bright spots on special teams, but they came up with a big field goal block.
Right. So we were going to do a kind of good, bad, and ugly thing, kind of tag along with some of the previous episodes and what we've done. So let's start this week. Let's change it up a little bit. Let's start it up with the bad portion of the segment, kind of make a bad, good, ugly sandwich.
Yeah, the good, bad, ugly just sounds like you're complaining at the end. You know, you're just
right.
Negative, negative. Yeah.
Don't want to kill all the good early and then just finish it off on a bad note.
There's a lot of good in a 48-7 win, but, you know, if you're really honest with yourself, that was not the prettiest 48-7 win you've ever seen.
No, and I mean, you know, we'll get right into it. So outside of the early start in this game, again, Rutgers comes down on the first possession, drives all the way down to the 20, and then we have two great plays back-to-back, just so happen to be back-to-back to each other, with the block kick, the block field goal, and then a big 80-yard run by Demas.
Opening drive here for Maryland, slant pattern, first play from scrimmage. It is Jackson to Dante Demas. Wow, what a start. For the Terps, but there's a flag down on the field.
Yeah, big play by Demas. He really showed his breakaway speed that we were all looking for early in the season.
Yeah.
Little, you know, 5-yard slant pass and takes it to the house. Just pulled away from everybody. You know, obviously not great coverage, but he didn't give anybody in that stadium a chance to catch up with him.
No, it had actually a very similar vibe to the Howard game. If you remember back in the Howard game, Demas, that was his biggest game of the year. He had two big catches in that game. I want to say he started it with a 26-yard touchdown pass reception, and then he also had a 60-something yarder, I think, in the second quarter in that game. This had that same type of feel to it. But we say the bad because that's where the good in the first quarter pretty much ended because it was nothing but three and outs after
that. Yeah, that was about 10 seconds of excitement again because it was a blocked field goal immediately next play, 80-yard touchdown, and then three and out. I think it was six in a row between the Rutgers and Maryland. And, you know, because we understood who Rutgers was, that didn't feel good. Like, even though you're still up seven, just the fact that you're going back and forth with this team that is a bottom dweller of the Big Ten. We didn't want to be the bottom dweller. That's what we talked about last time is, you know, battle for the worst team in the Big Ten. You know, that's kind of what it was. So hopefully we can prove that we're not the second worst team either coming up weeks. But that's what this game was, is whoever lost it would be considered for this time the worst in the Big Ten.
And then one of the other things in the bad that if this team wants to – again, be back into the talks of bowl contention and that thing. One of the areas that they absolutely have to improve in my opinion, it's going to be in the secondary. There were multiple times, again, going against a quarterback making his first start, a couple of big plays in this game where the corners were getting beat.
Yeah, Rutgers only had 163 yards, but two of them were on giant plays. You had a 49-yarder and a 37-yarder. Now, granted, one of them was on a flea flicker, so a little bit of trickery. But your job is to stay with the wide receiver. Your job is not to peek in the backfield and get beat. Right. That's why they created the flea flicker, is to get you to come off your assignment. And he did. Had to chase down and tried to pass interfere, as you should in college when you get beat deep. But that receiver manned up, jumped up, and got that ball anyway.
Now, I don't want to make a bigger deal about this than it really is. This is just kind of nitpicking, trying to fill a segment here, trying to find something in the bad that we could on the defensive side. That's an area. Look, we only gave up 7 points. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of bad that you can find on the defensive side of the ball in this game when you're only giving up 7 points.
Yeah, I can't complain too much about that. What I can complain about a little bit is the wide receiver use. Our leading receiver was running back Fleet Davis. They weren't really getting the balls out to many of the wideouts. We were excited about the tight end use. We're excited about the running backs on the backfield, but we don't want the wide receivers to just disappear. And there was a lot of one reception, one reception, one reception in the box score.
Yeah, I mean, do you think not having DJ Turner out there is having a bigger effect than maybe some people think?
I do think that's probably part of it. I hadn't really given that much thought until you mentioned it right now. He's a good position or possession receiver, you know, a Steve Smith type.
Right.
For the Ravens fans out there. So I do think that's probably a security blanket he's missing out there. But we still have talent at wideout. I mean, Dante Demas has shown it time and time again. You know, Savoy was heating up a little bit, had a couple of receptions in this game. You got talent. You just got to use it.
And speaking of some guys making a couple of receptions, we had a couple guys in this game make their Terps debut, as we had friend of the show, Dino Tomlin, showed up in this game. He had one catch for 7 yards. Go, Dino.
And he looked pretty excited. And, you know, we should go back to our interview where he said the most exciting time would have been his first catch. So I guess that's the most exciting time. We all just witnessed it.
That's pretty awesome. And then even another guy that, you know, he's seen some action on the other side of the ball, but made a debut on the offensive side of the ball, was Ray Lewis's son, Rashad.
Yeah, Rashad's played a little D-back for us and some punt return, but they were already talking moving him to wide receiver, and he had his first catch on the offensive side there for us. So good to see them going. So I guess we're deep into the good now.
Right.
As I talked about, running back Fleet Davis did have was leading us in receptions with 5 for 80 yards and 32 yards rushing. And these were some of the best passes I saw the day, too. The two long receptions by Fleet Davis down the right side, they ran the identical play back-to-back, and it was the entire length of the Maryland drive for a touchdown. Looked like nice, crisp passes by Jackson on that one, and Fleet Davis did not look like a running back. He looked like he was doing his job as a little slot receiver there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think another guy out of the backfield that had a big game in this game in multiple ways, it started with Javon Leak's touchdown run.
And on fourth and one, Javon Leak cuts left, goes right. Leak, it's a big one as he leaks out for the touchdown. Touchdown. 42 yards for Javon Leak.
Yeah, that was a big touchdown run. One of the more impressive runs, because a lot of the others were just long breaks off the edge, kind of untouched. He had a few cuts, made some men miss, and scored there, and followed up with an even bigger play to start the second half. You know, it could have gone in the bad, because he bobbled the muffed the kick there and dropped it right in the end zone. But ended up very, very good. It gave his blockers time to clear that right side. He went untouched 100 yards down the right side. He's got the special teams player of the week, and is up for a few awards with his three touchdowns on the day and a bunch of rushing yards.
Yeah, man, he had a huge, huge game in this game. Another guy that we want to make sure we touch on here, and you know me, from the tight end position, I'm a big Tyler Mabry fan. I've been saying it for weeks. I think that he's got the NFL body, and I think he's got the ability to be a tight end at the next level. But it was a different guy making plays for the Terps at the tight end position this week.
Yeah, Chigakonkwo, you know, didn't have a lot going on this game. He had two receptions, one for 16 and one for 14 yards, but definitely the most dominant play of the game. He catches the ball to the right, breaks a tackle, reverses field, outruns defenders, stiff arms, and then drags three defenders at the end with a bull rush. And I just thought we had to mention that kind of effort out of a man. I mean, he really looked like a man playing against boys on that play, and congratulations. I hope to see a lot more of it.
For sure. You know, again, tight end, being a former tight end in high school, I kind of gravitate towards that position, so I'm kind of critical on those guys, and he did. He had a huge game, and that was the epitome of what it means to be a tight end in this league.
Kick coverage was really good, too. I really want to mention this because, you know, Rutgers obviously down the dumps, but they had a kick returner named Young, and he looked scary good. He almost got loud out on us. I think he made like the 43-yard line once, but he showed really a lot of promise. He was quick, twitchy, and I was really impressed that we kept good coverage on him almost the whole game outside that one break. Right. But still, even to get him on the 43-yard line, I think that a lot of kick coverages are going to get burned by him in the future.
Yep. And then I think on the defensive side, the pressure, we kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier. I think this was another key factor in this game. Johnny Langan couldn't get comfortable in the pocket too much in this game. Outside of those, you know, he had a couple of drives where you could see he was a little bit in a zone, but the Terps defense overall kept the pressure on him pretty much all day long.
Yeah, and the pressure turned into two big interceptions. Both interceptions on the day were caused by the pressure. The quarterback was hit or really badly hurried on those plays. I think he was hit on both. The one was really close. But Ionde Ely had a big interception.
He had a huge game.
And it went all the way to the 2-yard line. On that, Shaq Smith was the one that hit the quarterback. Right. I can't remember who made the hit on the other interception. But it was really big game for our pass pressure, and we need a lot more of that. That always helps when you do have lack on the back end. If there are some corner issues, as we've complained about, pass rush can make those disappear. If you only got to cover for a couple seconds, then that makes you look a lot better.
Very true. All right. And finally, it's got to be the ugly segment. And for me, I know you and I have been uberly critical of some of our opponent's special teams units, and rightfully so. I mean, we played against some pretty trashy special teams units. Well, in this game, it wasn't just on their side of the field. It was on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, both punting and field goal kicking. The punter in this Rutgers game, I thought, was pretty funny, mentioned by the announcer that he was one of the best punters in the country. Well, there's some more to punting than just kicking the ball. So they had two delay of games on their punts. How you know exactly what you're doing? There's no communication, or you're going out there to punt the ball.
Right.
There's no excuse for getting two delay of games on that. So you're taking your crazy 50-yard punt average and making it a 45-yarder, which is the same as our kicker. So good job being the best. And then the field goal kicking was ugly, as you'll see here.
Now a 29-yarder. Kick is blocked and recovered by Rutgers. Maddox Williams picks it up. Maddox Williams still going across the 40.
So not only did we have that field goal blocked, our extra points were terrible too. We had an extra point that was blocked on a low kick. We had an extra point that was tipped and still hit the crossbar and went in. We had an extra point that didn't get touched but went off the left upright.
Bong.
Bong. That was the best sound. I love that. I don't know where they had that mic. It must have been on the upright.
But then again, it wasn't all on the Maryland side. You know, Rutgers, we mentioned it earlier, they had the opening drive that they went right down the field, got down to the 20-yard line, and then we blocked it. And then they also had another missed field goal later in the game. So really just the kicking units in this game were atrocious.
Yeah, couldn't have gotten uglier. They fit perfectly for this segment. But we'd really have to look. I mean, what are we – I know the punting team or punting side of Maryland is kind of a work in progress. We have two punters. We're using both of them, trying to figure it out. That's fine. The kicking game, you don't hear anything about. Again, like you said, we haven't – you know, we've only had extra points for the most part this year. We had the one field goal attempt versus Temple that the guy got injured on.
Right.
And now we've had, you know, a couple other field goals and extra points that look terrible since. Is he still injured? Is that the problem? If that's the problem, fine. Let's sit him for a week and get a kicker back out there. But if that's not the problem, we really got a lot of work on. And again, like I said about the, you know, the punter being there's a lot more than just punting the ball. I get that there was some bad blocking on some of the kicks. I get that there could be a bad snap. I get there could be things that are not his problem. But we got to figure out something because that's too many things going wrong in one game.
I completely agree. And then I know a lot of people are probably have listened so far in this podcast and are like, how in the hell have these guys not gotten into Josh Jackson? Well, there's a reason for it.
One, it's really hard to cut on a guy that got hurt.
Yeah, I feel bad putting Josh Jackson in the ugly considering he had an injury. And
had some pretty good stats if you're just looking at the stats.
If you're just looking at the numbers, he had decent stats. He was 9-16, so he was still just above 50% completion, and that's always been his issue. He's just not a very accurate passer.
Yardage looked better because of some big breaks.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple of big plays in this game. It started with that 80-yard pass to Dante Demas. But look, 9-16 for 179 yards. We saw more of the same inconsistencies in his throws in this game. I had told you, you know, last week prior to the injury that if we saw more of the same out of Jackson in this game, this is the perfect opportunity in this game going against one of the bottom dwellers of the Big Ten to make a change. If you're going to make a change at all, this was the perfect opportunity to do it. Unfortunately, it took an injury in this situation to get Piggy into the offense in this. But look, I think Piggy might end up being a better fit in this system.
And now we'll find out. And I think this is good either way because obviously Piggy didn't do enough to just separate himself and just show the whole country without a doubt he's better than Josh Jackson. And Josh Jackson is a transfer in from Loxley, and you want the transfer market to be positive for you. So you can't just bench your transfer that you begged to come play with you for a guy that might be about the same and not expect that to come up in the future when you're asking somebody else to play for you. Well, you promised Josh Jackson a starting spot and you pulled the rug out from under him. So, you know, you never want to see anybody hurt. But I think it's going to be the one positive here. Well, the biggest positive is this is a short-term injury. Like when he went down, I thought it was going to be an MCL and he's out
too.
For the year and it's over. High ankle sprain, obviously not the easiest thing to come back from, but he'll be back this season.
Right.
So I'm happy for him that way. And then it also gives us this window without, you know, Loxley looking bad and pulling back his guarantees or whatever he did for Josh Jackson transferring in, where we can take a nice look at Piggy.
Yeah, and here's why I kind of think Piggy will be a better fit. I mean, when you just look at the numbers of what he did in this game, he was 13 of 18 for 111 yards, 6.2 average. So he's not getting any big plays in this game. He didn't have any big exciting plays like Josh Jackson had in this game. But what we saw was that he was accurate in this game. And where we'll see Piggy excel more so in this offense is when we talk about the struggles of the offensive line, right? We talk about how many injuries they've had, the youth that's on the offensive line. When you start getting into the thick of this schedule coming up against some of these bigger Big Ten teams, some of these tougher, you know, in the trenches, much stronger Big Ten teams, that's going to be a glaring issue. And when you have a quarterback like Josh Jackson, who, albeit he's mobile, but he's more north and south mobile. He's not, you know, east and west and can get out of the pocket and roll and throw the ball on the move mobile. That's where I think Piggy might be a better fit. You got to be able to compensate when you have issues on the offensive line.
Yeah, and I think he's got as good an arm as Josh Jackson's shown since the beginning of the year. I mean, these big plays we talk about with Josh Jackson, the the first play was a 5-yard pass that goes 80 yards.
Right.
The only real downfield balls that I was very impressed with were both passes back to back to Fleet Davis. It wasn't his first read, which was amazing, because most of the game, again, Josh Jackson was caught staring at his wide receivers.
Yeah.
Rutgers just wasn't good enough to do anything about it. Like, that was the same thing that got him in trouble the last 2 weeks, was staring down the wideouts and they're going to the ball. Well, Rutgers just didn't respond. They didn't have the athletes, or they didn't have the coaching to get in the right positions. But if you watch, you can pause that play 1 second after snap and you know where the ball is going. Just draw a straight line where his eyes are.
Right.
So you can't do that the rest of the year. And again, there were times where he didn't. Like, Fleet Davis plays looked great, but that can't happen on almost any play, and sure shouldn't happen on multiple.
And I know some people's concerns out there are, can Piggy make the deep throws like Josh Jackson has? Josh Jackson had a couple of good games. He had two good games where he had a couple of down the field completions in both of those games that he did well. Outside of that, he hasn't looked good throwing the deep ball. And in those two same games where we were up so big, we did get to see Piggy come in, and Piggy made a couple of big down the field throws in those
good
games
ones,
too.
Right,
so
in the small windows.
Yeah. So I really don't think there's much of a drop off there, if any, between those two quarterbacks. And again, I just think having that added mobility to be able to get outside of the pocket, extend the play a little bit longer, give your wide receivers chances to get open, I think that all that can be is positive for this offense.
Yeah, and I want to take you down a trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
The first day we met at Ohio State last year, that was Piggy that took us to overtime versus number 6 in the country, Ohio State.
Absolutely right.
And he missed one 2-point conversion throw, just the wrong direction. Thought he was breaking in. He broke out and missed the ball. Now, again, he did what every good quarterback should do, and he took the credit for that miss, and I think it probably was on him. But I watched him early in this offseason. He's practicing that throw. He's still haunted by that throw. And that was a guy that believed that he was hampered by two things, as you'll hear in this clip.
I guess you could say that, but, like, not really, though. You know what I'm saying? I'm just not getting back. So I feel like I told you before, like, I feel way comfortable. I had the brace. Lost a lot of weight too. So I feel back, like, I'm at the same weight I was doing Texas during that same year, so I feel back to myself really.
You feel better than you did when you came in for the last few games last year? Physically?
Yeah, definitely. Like, because with the brace, you know, nothing went wrong with the brace, but I feel like it was, like, helping me secure, but, like, I didn't feel the same as I was against Texas, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, having it off and knocking that weight off too that I had, I just feel better.
Yeah, and I think that for me was two of the big concerns I had about Piggy. Was he going to be able to come back from the injury? Was he going to be affected by the injury? And I thought, even when we went to the spring game, which was still early on, you know, he wasn't even out there playing, but we saw him on the sidelines. He looked like he was in better shape. He looked like he had lost some weight. And that goes to speak to what Piggy's talking about here.
Yeah, and if what I saw against Ohio State is not what we're going to see, we're going to see something better than that. That's how Piggy feels. We're going to do just fine. Like, yeah, we still have our issues. We still have lineman issues. That's going to be an issue more than last year. I can't say that we're going to be as good as we were in that game, because obviously everything went right. You know, you start off with giant 80-yard runs, and you have, all the broken plays and everything. That was a one-off.
Right.
But he played just fine. If that's what we're going to get from him, Piggy will be the starter the rest of the year. Now, I'm not going to just guarantee that's what we're going to get from him. We have to see. And if we get the Texas quarterback, where we were all riding on a high down there in that stadium watching right. him play, then that'd be great too. So, you know, I'm pretty excited for the rest of the year.
I am too. And speaking of the rest of the year, well, let's move on to the next game. And we've got a big one. We go on the road, we stay on the road, and we go to Purdue and take on the Boilermakers. Now, I was kind of surprised when I was trying to dive into the history of this matchup. There's not much. We've had two games against this team.
Yeah, one in 2006, obviously not relevant, though, you know, Loxley would be probably on the team with Ralph at that point.
I think so, yeah.
But we won in the Champ Sports Bowl. Last meeting was in 2016. We won 50-7 at home. Haven't played at Purdue because we had, obviously, the common ground field for the bowl game, and then we played at home. So this will be our first trip out there to Purdue. It's their homecoming. Homecoming record for them, 51-41-4. It's been a long-term program. They got a pretty good record there. And they have some sweet uniforms. Have you seen these things?
Yeah, they are pretty nice.
Not gonna lie, as a school that likes to, you know, focus on the uniforms being the Under Armour flagship, pretty jealous of these Nikes. And I feel like Nike did that because we're the Under Armour flagship.
Very well could. So in this game, I guess a couple of guys that we want to highlight. I want to start with the running back position. And there is a freshman in this game that, to me, he looks like the complete back. He can do a little bit of everything. I know you were talking about it earlier. What do you think that this kid brings to the table?
Yeah, King Doru, that's what I'm going to go with. I haven't heard his name pronounced there. We'll go with that. First start against Minnesota just a couple weeks ago. Rushed for 94 yards on 20 carries, 4.7 average, 2 touchdowns, and 4 receptions for 32 yards. That's a really strong game for your first start. We'd take that out of anybody.
Came the first true freshman with 3 touchdowns in a game for the Boilermakers since 2000. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they're a super young squad, including 10 starters. The Boilermakers have 27 true or redshirt freshmen playing their first 3 games.
Wow. Wow.
They got some studs in that young group too. Freshman defensive end George Karlafis paces Purdue with 8 tackles for loss and 4 sacks. Ranks 3rd in the Big Ten with tackles for loss and is tied for 7th in sacks. So gotta keep some blocking on him. Obviously our offensive line's one of our weak points. We can't have him in Piggy's face all day.
Yeah, he had a huge game against TCU where he had a sack and an interception. Actually became the first Purdue true freshman to do so in a game since 2004. This kid's definitely the real deal.
Yeah, Maryland dodged. Well, you know, I thought Maryland dodged a bullet when I wrote this, but I'm hearing whispers that Rondell Moore is going to come out, and that's going to be a big difference in what happens in this game. But I'm going to go with him still being out. This will be a miraculous recovery if he's playing already. Rondell Moore has hauled in 11 or more receptions 8 times in his 16 career collegiate contests, 8.4 receptions per game. All-American last season, becoming the first freshman in Big Ten history to have that honor.
Wow.
This season, he was off the just a great good a start. More open this season with 24 receptions for 334 yards in his 2 games before leaving with a left leg injury in the 31-38 loss to Minnesota. And his undetermined time should be back this season, which is good for him. I'm just hoping it's not this weekend.
Yeah, I think if they're going to bring him back, why rush him against Maryland? You know, is what I'm hoping that they're thinking,
yeah,
hoping
too,
that they're underestimating us. Yeah, Moore's definitely a kid that has to be accounted for, will kill you with the big plays, and will definitely be playing at the next level. So here's to hoping that he is on the sideline come this weekend.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to playing against him. That'll bring us right into our predictions then. So on the year, I'm 4-1 on predictions. Fred's 3-2.
Okay. So, I didn't realize we were keeping a tally, but all right.
I'm keeping a tally because I'm winning. That's what happens. We got to keep winning tallies.
All right, man. So let's talk a little bit about maybe what we expect from Maryland in this game. Before you give me your prediction, if you're going to say Maryland's going to win this game, which I got a feeling you are, if you think Maryland's going to win this game, how do we get there?
I think we get there with Piggy, number one, because I think that we're going to need him to be mobile to keep away from this freshman defensive end that's lighting up the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're going to see a bigger game for Fleet Davis because I think he really showed all of his ability last week. You know, you're talking about a third-string running back that had the most receptions on the team and had some nice runs too. So I think Fleet Davis will be big. And hopefully Dante Demas can really put to abuse this young secondary. I'm going to go with my score being 35-17 Maryland wins.
All right. I'm right there with you. I do have the Terps winning this game, but I think Piggy's definitely going to be the determining factor in this game. I do want to see Anthony McFarland get more involved in this offense. Like for me, you know, in the last game, yeah, if you just looked at the stats, 7 carries for 87 yards, but 80 of that was on one play. Yeah,
7 carries for 6 yards.
Piggy and McFarland last year together played pretty well. Now, granted, it was a totally different offensive line that we had this last year. But where I think McFarland will benefit from Piggy being out there is right now teams are stacking the box because Josh Jackson's been playing terrible football. So they've been stacking the box, and McFarland hasn't been able to go anywhere, hasn't been able to get any traction, right? If Piggy can go out there and pick off a couple of passes early, got to start early. If he can do that early, that takes the pressure off of the offensive line, that backs up the linebackers, backs up the DBs a little bit, gives McFarland some more lanes. And that's why I say I think the effect of having Piggy out there will benefit Anthony McFarland.
That's a two-edged sword, though. That's the reason you're seeing all these big plays. The reason we're getting all these 80-yard runs is because they've moved all the defense up for this.
That's if. That's a big if. We're not seeing it consistently enough to know that we can just rely on that being a big bang like that.
Obviously,
especially
you want them
better
to stretch. I'm just saying you're going to see less of these blowing up 80-yard plays. I'd rather have a bunch of 25-yard plays.
Yeah.
That sounds great because that means you're rolling downfield and you're starting drives. This was touchdown or punt. That was like,
right.
You know, so I do think that stretching the field will benefit everybody, but that is one of the reasons that some of these plays, even though on the stat sheet, 80-yard run for McFarland, well, that play was over after 3 yards because he had beat everybody on the defense because they stacked the box so much.
Right, but my point is this offense will be more balanced.
Yeah.
And when the last couple of weeks before Josh Jackson's injury, we were seeing it one-sided because, I mean, Jackson was having, what, 100 yards a game, averaging 100 yards a game? That's not going to get it done.
And throwing a 5-yard slant in the middle is the same as running the ball. You don't have to cover it much different.
Right.
So you have to be working the outsides of the field or deeper downfield to really affect the defense and make them cover all areas.
Exactly. So that's why I think having Piggy out there is going to have a big effect on this offense, and I think we'll see that this week. I got the Terps winning, but I don't have it as much of a lopsided game as you do. I have it 34-27.
Okay. We'll see where this goes. Wherever it goes, we will then be following up with a non-noon kick.
Yeah.
Damon Evans.
Hey-o.
Damon Evans really took it personally when I just trashed him 2 episodes ago. And he's just been on the phones constantly trying to get us not a noon kick because Ryan on Shell and Tell really wanted one.
I'm glad it didn't end up being a 7 o'clock kick because that didn't end very well against Penn State.
We can get another 7 o'clock kick against someone other than Penn State or Ohio State. And maybe we can make that work better. But yeah, 3:30 kick, as I said 2 episodes ago, my favorite kickoff.
Yeah.
You can tailgate before. You can chill out after the game and let everybody sober up and have some dinner.
Right.
It's the best kickoff there is. So I'm pretty excited about it. We'll see if we're down there tailgating. We have two options. We might be Renfesting for the tailgate, drink some mead, and go to the football game.
Yeah.
Or might be down there tailgating early. Not sure yet.
But either way, make sure you send us a message on social media if you are down there because we'd love to meet up with you, get to talk some Terps. Be a fun time for you guys to come down there and see us.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for football this week. But we do have some new basketball news as they start Big Ten Media Day. Basketball's only a month away.
I almost forgot we were going to talk about basketball on this podcast.
It's been, you know, it's really hard. We already have a lot of football to talk about. And when basketball's pretty much doing the same thing over and over again, they're not even allowed to practice last week.
Speaking of practice, though.
Ah, the practice facility they just announced.
Did you see that?
Beautiful.
It is gorgeous. Now, I don't think it's fully funded yet, so I don't think they actually have a start date for construction. But nonetheless, the plans, they laid out the blueprint. If you haven't seen it, go on social media. Just search for the Under Armour. Or not. It's not Under Armour yet. It's
nope.
The
not wait, yet.
Not
it
yet.
Will be.
Keyword yet. It's the performance facility.
I don't know. It might be the Scott Van Pelt performance facility. Because Every image has Scott Van Pelt on a television somewhere. They knew exactly what SportsCenter was going to look like 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah, it's really cool to see. Just another added chip for the Terps basketball program in recruiting. There's actually talks that they're going to be building an underground tunnel that's going to connect this practice facility
to the Xfinity Center,
which is kind of cool. Look. The bread and butter of this university has always been the basketball team, and it has been for a very long time. And this is just another piece that's going to help Maryland continue to be a powerhouse when it comes to basketball.
Yeah, and it was a really interesting press conference when they announced this practice center. Obviously, a bunch leaked out. Everybody knew what the press conference was going to be about pretty much if you'd had any social media contact. But it was cool to see Turgeon very excited and Brenda Freeze as well, because it'll be obviously for both programs, and kind of pull back the curtain and let us see a little bit of what the team had to deal with and how you have to have so many different things. So you all think Xfinity Center, that's where the basketball team plays.
Right.
Well, it's also where the volleyball team plays, and it's also where gymnastics has their events, and it's also where graduation is. So all these things that they have to work around, and now they'll have their own basketball center where they can just go play basketball.
Right.
And they have two full-size courts in this thing, so even if women's and men's have to practice at the same time, no problem whatsoever. So it was really cool to hear some of the insides and outs. I would definitely recommend it. Johnny Holiday hosted it. Both coaches and Damon Evans talked. It's worth a listen.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, let's talk a little bit about the roster. There hasn't been a whole lot going on. We know that there's been a lot of hype around this basketball team. A lot of national pundits have them out there ranked in the top 10 preseason polls. I even read an article today that said these were March Madness selections or pre-rankings already. They had Maryland being a 2 seed already. I mean, I know this is absolutely absurd to that somebody
actually
does this.
Last time this happened, it went really poorly for us, so I'm not going to get too excited.
That was going to be the other thing, was the last time they were hyping this team up this high, it did not go very well. But look, I've got a good feeling about this team. You know, they've been putting in the work. They've obviously been putting the work in the weight room, as Sticks has now turned into logs, apparently.
Yeah, he's got some serious upper body size on him. The legs are falling behind a little bit. As kind of interesting, in Turgeon interview I saw, they said that, you know, they actually had to stop Sticks from putting on weight because as he gained muscle mass, he started getting some leg pains and stuff. So he's like, you have to find the perfect balance for your body type.
Right.
With perfect balance for your body type, I thought everybody was getting bigger and stronger, which, you know, who knows? He might be stronger, but Eric Ayala got a lot smaller this offseason.
Yeah, lost 18 pounds and now can dunk the ball. Who would have guessed?
Who would have known he couldn't dunk the ball? I didn't even know.
Are you kidding me? Like, he was like the least flashy player as far as that goes.
You know, I'm an Eric Ayala truther.
You know,
I think that he's going to have one of the better careers in Maryland. I've said this multiple times. I love watching him play. I love the control that he plays under. So I'll be really interested to see whether that control he played under was because he wasn't in good enough shape to do something else. And we'll see if I still love Eric Ayala. I'm hoping I do. They're saying he's still one of the best shooters that Turgeon's ever coached. So that's the big thing. And now he's got some more explosive ability.
And they're also saying that this is going to be one of Turgeon's best squads that he's ever had. So there's a lot to be excited about with this basketball season. But I don't want to get too hyped up on basketball right now because I'm really trying to focus on this football season. I want to see this football team get to a bowl game. God damn it, I want to see at least 6 wins. You and I had talked. I said I was going to hoping for 8. Probably fall back on 7. Now I'm just praying that we get to 6 and we get a chance at a bowl.
So that brings me up this question. So is Minnesota going to be a golden opportunity for us as we start this, the Golden Gophers?
Well, I mean, it very well could, because we're sitting at 3 wins right now. If we go into Purdue and handle our business there, that puts us at 4. We come home, we take on Indiana at 3:30, as you mentioned. That should be a game that we can win.
Can win. It's not a cakewalk.
A good offensive team. They've got a pretty scary offense, so our defense is going to be tested in that game.
Definitely going to be more difficult than Rutgers, and hopefully definitely more difficult than Purdue. But it's a winnable game, so that puts us at 5.
Yeah, that puts us at 5 with a very winnable game in Minnesota. We may be celebrating a little hard in Minnesota.
It's going to be real interesting. I hope that that's at least the scenario. You know what I mean? That would be so much extra for if you're just listening to the show for the first time. My first away game ever with the Terps will be
our
yeah. So I've been,
it's all about Ryan. You gotta, if you don't know that about Ryan, it's all about Ryan.
I mean, I've been at 19 years of home games instead of one, so yeah, that's sort of, but yes, our first away game ever will be against Minnesota in a couple weeks, so we're very excited about it either way. But that would be something extra to have on the line if we have 5 wins going into there. Now, of course, Minnesota's 5-0. So that's no cakewalk, but I don't think they've played many people. We're going to find out this weekend they played Nebraska. If they win that, then I'll get a little bit more scared of Minnesota. But right now they look like a cakewalk schedule like the Patriots.
I'm getting excited, man. I would love the opportunity to win these next 2 games and be going to Minnesota with the hopes that we're playing for a potential bowl game with that win. Man, it would make that trip really, really sweet. Almost as if
special.
We planned it that way.
I know, right? That's why we bought the tickets. We knew we'd be playing for a bowl game. Nailed this.
Well, we want to We want to thank all you guys for tuning in, as always. Make sure you follow us on all the social media networks out there. You follow us at our Shell and Tell podcast page at Shell and Tell Pod. You can follow me at FredBLBS. Follow Ryan at TerpsBSpert. And, of course, if you've got any questions or any comments, you can leave them there on Twitter or send us an email at shellandtellpod@gmail.com. If you're looking for this audio podcast, which if you've gotten this far, you found it. But if not, you can always find all the other episodes on our website at birdlandbs.com/shellandtell or find it on your app of choice, primarily, it seems like, Apple iTunes and Spotify are everybody's field of choice. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I'm nixing the whole all is well under the shell after Josh Jackson's injury and everything else that we've had going on.
You will not nix it.
I'm nixing it. It's not going to happen anymore. I don't want any more bad juju around this team.
Even with the basketball team practicing now, we have to wish them all is well under the shell at least once.
Oh, man. All right, Ryan, sign us off.
All right. So with both teams practicing and the and the football team needing to say this together.
Earmuffs.
Here's to wishing both teams all is well under the shell.